Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Also today, the U.S. Poet Laureate of the United States, Juan Felipe Herrera, gave the keynote speech at Boston University's annual Martin Luther King Jr. Convocation. We spoke with him in our studios earlier today, and he read his poem called Every Day We Get More Illegal.
Every day we get more illegal. Yet the peach tree still rises and falls with fruit and without. Birds eat it, the sparrows fight. Our desert burns with trash and drug. It also breeds and sprouts vines and maguey. Laws pass, laws with scientific walls, detention cells. Husband with the son, the wife and the daughter who married a citizen, they stay behind, broken, slashed, unpowdered in the apartment, to deal out the day and the puzzles. Another law, then another. Mexican, Indian, spirit, exile, migration.
And that's U.S. Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera. He's the first Mexican-American to be U.S. Poet Laureate, a background that he says gives him a special appreciation for the work of Dr. King. He talked with us about his personal story today, about how Dr. King and other activists inspired him to become the top poet in the nation.
My personal story is the story of my family, my small family, my mother, my father, myself. My parents were born before the Mexican Revolution, before 1910. My father was born in 1882, and my mother around 1907. And my father crossed into the United States as a 14-year-old teenager, already a man in his world, to find a new life in Denver, Colorado. Jumped on a train from Chihuahua, northern Mexico. And my mother came at the very tail end of the Mexican Revolution, around 18 or 19, with my grandmother and her sister Aurelia. My uncles had already arrived in Fort Bliss, El Paso, Texas, to join the army in order to bring the rest of the family. So that's the backdrop of my parents, and we grew up. I grew up as they worked the farms and the fields in the very, very early 50s. And that influenced my life because I was in that world until I was 7 years old. And then from there on, lived in barrios and outskirts and trailers and mountains and ranches. And by the time I was 7 years old, I finally made it to Escondido, California and San Diego, California, where I met Mrs. Lelia Sampson in third grade, who really, really touched me and told me that I had a beautiful voice. I stood up in class. She invited me to sing, and I did. And that's what she told me. And it was a riddle. It was a life path.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. So what did you sing?
I sang Three Blind Mice.
Really?
I sang Three Blind Mice. And, I couldn't believe. Now I can't believe that I actually stood up and walked over to the head of class and turned around and faced the class and sang a song, Three Blind Mice. And then she turned around and says, you have a beautiful voice. And we've been talking. She's 95 years old now.
Really?
And we found ourselves again.
Oh.
Because I mentioned this all the time because it was a pivotal moment in my life. And so we say hello now. And she found out through the newspaper.
Oh, my gosh. Now, why was that so pivotal for you, do you think? Just confidence? Or what was it that...
Because she gave me the language. And it was confidence. And she noticed me. Before that, I was completely, double 100% invisible because I had been hurt in the classroom by the teachers. And I had seen so much visible pain in my friends, students, second grade as well. So third grade, I definitely wasn't about to get up in front of class and sing. And that happened. And by the end of the year, I was singing solos with the choir, her choir, gospel. In front of the rest of the assembly of the school, Lowell Elementary in Logan Heights, San Diego.
When you say that you were hurt by the other teachers and things, what do you mean? You were looked at differently because of your background?
Well, I was probably looked at differently. What happened was when I first went to school, no one knew in our family what it really was. It was a building, and that's all. My mother had an idea. She went to made it to third grade in El Paso, and my father didn't know about schools because he was out in the country all the time as a young man, and he learned English by buying words for a penny, English in English. How do you say leche in English? ¿Cómo se dice? Milk, milk. Oh, milk. So that's how he learned his English.
Gosh.
So I walked in, found the door. I opened whatever door I saw, and I was late. Apparently, I was late. And I spoke in Spanish, you know, ¿Qué está pasando? Yo no sé. And what's going on? And my teacher called me over to the corner, and she spanked me and put me over her knee and spanked me in front of all the children. And that was so shocking for me because my mother was the opposite. My mother would teach me songs and read me whatever books she could find in the secondhand store, and I was the only child. So imagine how cared for I was by my mother, and to go from her and
to get spanked
and you know and hit with rulers when I blurted out in English. So when I made it to third grade, Mrs. Sampson pulled me out of that world and then said that I had a beautiful voice to me. She directed herself to me, that my voice, whatever that was, you know, my voice, what is that? And it's beautiful. Well, what is that? So I had to block that phrase. And now, and then I had to challenge myself. I had to find a way of expressing myself. It wasn't just, okay, I know this. I didn't understand it. It didn't make sense. I denied it. But by seventh grade, I said, Mr. Schuster, music teacher, says, well, what are you? What are you, John? I said, why is he asking me that? What am I? This is seventh grade in Roosevelt Junior High in San Diego. What am I? What am I? What am I? What are you? What am I? Oh, I said, I'm Hawaiian, because I had come in from the Bay Area. And I said, that's about the best I can do. I'm not able to say Mexican. I'm Hawaiian. Because I felt it was hard to say. It was hard to say that I was Mexican. How could I say I'm Mexican? My parents are so poor. I am, you know, so poor. I don't even live in a house. And if I do, I don't want people to come over because I'm not like everybody. I had all those things just swirling and boiling and smoldering. So I said I was Hawaiian. And then, of course, I said, that's it. I'm not going to lie anymore. Right there and then there, I walked out after class, and I said, that's the last time I lie about who I am. I'm not going to take band. Mr. Schuster invited me to be in band. I love music. I wanted to be in that band. I wanted to play saxophone. I loved saxophone. I put $5 down on a saxophone on Pawn Shop Row in San Diego. And at the Apex a music store on Pawn Shop Row where people left their instruments. And it was a beautiful tenor sax. But I'm not going to do what I said. I'm going to go into choir. I have no choice. That's the only way I'm going to learn how to speak out. So I engage in a journey of training myself to be able to speak and not to lie from then on.
Wow.
That's it.
And to sing.
To sing. But it was an excuse to sing in my mind.
Yeah.
I really wanted to speak and tell the truth.
That's incredible. But, you know, how was it that you were able to? I'm sure that there are, as you know, many children who struggle with this, feeling different, feeling like outsiders, not having resources, embarrassed sometimes by their family before they get that voice and say, I am who I am, and I'm going to believe in that and make a stand for that. Why did you have the, you know, foresight and then the resilience to now become the U.S. Poet Laureate after that?
Well, you know, everything. I was in a moment where things were changing radically, and I saw them and I listened to them, and I followed them. I was attracted to them. I was attracted to Martin Luther King. How he spoke, he stood up. I said, "How does he do that?" You know, I was very young. I said, "How does he do that?" I would see people on the street or at school talking to each other in a group and being very easy about it, and how natural it came to them. I go, oh, I wish I could do that. And I saw people standing up in the free speech mounds and whether it was in high school and then at UCLA when I first went in 1967. I go, oh, I wish I could do that. I was just at awe. And I was, you know, just holding my hands and put them on my face and wanting to do that. And my friends were poets. And we were all everybody was talking. And then we had the Vietnam War. And then we had Martin Luther King. And then we had Dolores Huerta and Cesar Chavez and Malcolm X. All speakers. Mm. All amazing, powerful speakers with great audiences and an amazing cause, a beautiful, real, soul-rattling cause. And I believed in that. My mother taught me to love others and to be kind. And she had a hard life, and my father had a hard life. And there were elders by then in the 60s. And I wanted to do something for them and for others like them and farm workers. And I saw Martin Luther King, Cesar Chavez, Dolores Huerta, Malcolm X. And I had this little personal secret project of being a speaker. So all those things. And my friends were poets. All those things just fused together, and I took the challenge.
Tell me about your personal project. Would you practice in front of a room to see how you would speak?
I did. My personal project was that secret that I wanted to be a speaker and that I didn't want to be fearful anymore. I didn't want my voice to tremble and squeak. And I didn't want to be afraid, most of all. I didn't want to be afraid. And I wanted to say things. I don't care what they were. You know, Milky Ways, Popeye, it didn't matter. And then I found a cause that really put everything together for me. It was the fire that warmed me and guided me. And my other side projects, like you said, were practicing in front of a mirror, or were getting a book with long poems by Wordsworth or Longfellow, or even Garcia Lorca that I discovered in the Mission District in a Spanish bookstore. And I would get the poem and put it in front of me and recite it out loud like an oratorical project. And I waved my hands in the air as if I was directing the choir or an orchestra. And I would recite those words in a little tiny apartment on 11th Street in San Diego. That was three blocks from high school. And no one knew that what I was doing. Not even my mom. She was in the next room somewhere attending to things. And that's what I would do, because I wanted to do that bad.
And your cause, you said, until you discovered your cause, mm-hmm. Your cause was to write?
No. You know, my cause was to assist others. My cause was to bring out our histories and stories to our larger community, which didn't have books, which were being blocked out of schools, which didn't have resources, that were laborers, that were in East L.A., that were farm workers, that were students as well, that were working really hard to go to the university, and everyone. My cause was not my cause. My cause was the cause of the people. And I took that on very early, and I guess that's what pulled me out of that little dark room, even though I was still nervous and I was still squeaking my voice, but at least I was standing up with poems and with my friends using their musical instruments.
How amazing it is that this person who inspired you, Dr. King, that now you are speaking at a commemoration for him. What does that feel like?
It's a very big challenge. It's a very big challenge. It feels incredible. I feel like I'm in an incredible moment, and I must take it on. It's a very big role mm-hmm. right now, at this very moment. It's a very big role. I'm more used to reciting poems and performing them in many ways, enjoying them across many borders and countries and states in the United States. This is a little different. I think it's the first time I'm invited to a Martin Luther King a celebration as a speaker. So I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. I'm looking forward to it.
Is there one particular writing of Dr. King's that really resonates with you?
You know, it's his words. You know, it's his words. His words of freedom and his words of peace and his strength, his incredible strength and courage, and his poetics, of course, and his notion of having a dream, and a dream that needs to be renewed every day.
I'm glad you're writing. Are you still singing?
I'm still singing. I have a harmonica, a guitar,
yeah,
from folk song movement days in the 60s as well. Those were singing days and guitar days.
Yeah. Do you sing Three Blind Mice?
You know, I think I need to bring it back up and sing it. Why not? You know, three blind mice, three blind mice. And let us be full-sighted human beings with open hearts and embracing poems and embracing lives.
Well, I want to thank you very much for coming in. It was a terrific to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
That's U.S. Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera. We spoke with him earlier today. He's in Boston to give the keynote address at Boston University's Martin Luther King Jr. Convocation. And if you want to hear Juan Felipe Herrera read his entire poem, Every Day We Get More Illegal, you can find it at our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.